This is a special Friday, July 18th edition of Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In a world plagued with preemptive strikes, grave new fatal diseases, and untold poverty, this year's Fez Festival of World Sacred Music proved a welcome respite to those in attendance. Fez, it is said, does not reveal herself easily. To gain access to this city, which has become the political and intellectual capital of Morocco, one must enter through the gate of the sacred, described as both visible and veiled. Because Fez is a sanctuary, the Sufis, the Muslim mystics, have all called it the Zawai, or sanctuary. Katia Stitt and Willard Jenkins, Peace Watch correspondents for WPFW in Washington, traveled to Morocco recently to the imperial city of Fez to attend the 9th annual Fez Festival of World Sacred Music. The theme, From My Soul to Your Soul, The Art of Transmission. This year's sub-theme of the festival's humanities conference was Giving Soul to Globalization. And ironically, one of the festival's primary supporters is the World Bank. Our correspondent spoke with Catherine Marshall, Director of Values and Ethics and advisor to the President of the World Bank, who has represented the institution at the festival for the last 3 years. It was an unusually warm spring this year, and sitting under the heat of the Moroccan sun, the discussion meandered from topic to topic, including the World Bank's interest in the festival, to the controversial issue of privatization of water.
Well, let me first give you a non-soundbite answer, which is that these are extremely complex issues. And privatization is a different issue in every single country, whether it's Britain, France, the United States, Bolivia, Ghana, South Africa, Senegal. Every country, the problems of privatization are different. Privatization is not a magic recipe. It never has been. And it certainly is not a magic recipe now. But neither is state management of services a magic recipe. What led to some of the enthusiasm for privatization was first some rather spectacular failures of public services, where you have a situation where poor people in many communities pay 10 times more for water than the middle class and the rich when public sector is providing water. So trying to get efficiency and competitiveness into the water sector has been one of the reasons for trying to bring the energy and the resources, the enormous resources that the private sector can bring, to bear on water. And there are many successful private water companies all over the world. The challenge, though, on water, and this is just an example of the complexity of this, is that there has to be regulation. In other words, there has to be enough of a state presence that it can assure that there is clean water, that it is fairly distributed, that pricing mechanisms work. And secondly, there has to be a safety net for the very poor who can't pay. Because in those situations where we hear that poor people have their water cut off because they can't afford it or that they are drinking polluted water, that's a travesty. It's not the intent of any policy, any decent policy. And neither is it a necessity. There are many cases where there are mechanisms which can assure clean water for the poor. So what we're looking for in almost all cases is some kind of a partnership between public and private, where the public role does what the public should do and assures and guarantees and monitors, and that the private sector brings the resources, the creativity, and the management, which can be the best of the private sector.
How did the World Bank come to be involved with the Fez Festival of World Sacred Music?
Jim Wolfenson, who's the president of the World Bank, is also a passionate advocate for and supporter of the arts. And in fact, for the full 9 years of the festival, he's been one of the patrons and has supported the festival with his heart and with his spirit. He has been invited to participate and was invited to participate in the first colloquium, which was held 2 years ago, and he couldn't come, and so he asked me to come instead. So I came to represent him. We were fascinated that first year by the potential for a very different kind of dialogue on very difficult issues. A dialogue where people came as individuals with a lot of convictions and a lot of passion from very, very different worlds and with very different viewpoints. And with the music festival and with the history of Fez behind, with the history of its harmony between different religions, its role intellectually as an intellectual capital, its role as a crossroads of civilizations. We felt the potential in this process to look at the very basic issues that face us in a different way.
The city of Fez is located in the north-central part of Morocco, close by the Atlas Mountains and approximately 3.5 hours by car from the Moroccan business center of Casablanca. Fez is an ancient city, one of the oldest continually inhabited cities in the world. The Medina, or Old City of Fez, is reputedly the oldest Medina in the Islamic world. The spirit of the Fez Festival of World Sacred Music, which brings together many cultures and viewpoints, engenders a sense of political neutrality in favor of the pursuit of a common good. The World Bank might in some quarters be considered at best an interesting supporter of the Fez Festival. We spoke with Catherine Marshall amidst the striking Roman ruins of Volubilis, about an hour outside of Fez and adjacent to the picturesque town of Meknes. We asked Ms. Marshall about the World Bank's support and that seeming contradiction.
The World Bank's core mission, and it's one in which I believe deeply, and Jim Wolfenson, who I work for, believes deeply, that the reason that we exist and our central purpose is to try to address the scandal of world poverty, but also the more complex issues of inequality and opportunity and the quality of life, so sustainable development. That's our mission. And we feel that there is a great deal that we share, even with the most passionate critics of the World Bank. And one of the reasons we're here is that we would like to see ourselves as a bridge. We would like to see ourselves in a dialogue where we learn from each other and where we have an appreciation of the importance, a shared conviction in the importance of this challenge of fighting poverty. And some respect and conversation, some dialogue and learning about why we see things so differently. And from that difference, whether we can find better ways of solving the enormous problems that we face. So we see no contradiction. For us, this is where we belong, and we're very proud to be very much part of the spirit of Fez.
We've been asking the question from different angles, in terms of your interpretation, your personal interpretation of one of the main sub-themes of this festival, which is giving soul to globalization. What is your perspective on that?
To me, for me personally, it comes down to two things. First is asking the most basic questions behind all of the actions, the activist things we do, the pragmatic water projects, HIV/AIDS, education. Where is this leading? What kind of meaning does it have for different people? And that's part of the element of soul. It's the sense of purpose. And the second aspect is the aspect of the community and the common bonds that there are that are reflected in both the differences in cultures and in the common themes across cultures, the ties for people across different worlds, which is so vivid in the cultural aspects of the festival, seeing the tremendous range that this festival has, all the way from African drummers to Tibetan music, Indian dance, and watching the joy that people have in that, enjoying the diversity, but also seeing them appreciating that they can enjoy it in common and yet be very different. So the question then on giving soul to globalization is how can we translate the kinds of experience that people have in this world of music, of appreciating difference but finding so much in a common joy in it, into some of the more complex, more pragmatic, more practical aspects of economic, social, and political life.
Many countries in the so-called developing world, particularly in Africa and Asia, are strapped with enormous debt service to the World Bank. The Jubilee 2000 movement is a worldwide effort at seeking significant debt relief for these countries so that they might further develop their infrastructures without this enormous burden. Jubilee 2000 is now under the banner of Jubilee Movement International, which was established at a conference held in Mali in April 2001. The express goal of the Jubilee Movement International is to lift nations and their peoples out of foreign debt bondage and to struggle for global economic and social justice. Obviously, the World Bank and its policies has become a focal point of this movement.
Jubilee 2000 movement, I have a personal perspective on it because it's one of the activities, one of the movements that in fact has led us to the dialogue with the world of religion. It was the criticism that was coming from churches as well as from critics, from mosques, from temples, that helped us to see. Someone said that the revelation is taking a veil from something that was there. So all of these were there, but in an ironic sense, the Jubilee movement helped us to see the importance of the kind of movements and mobilization that is possible through the world of religion. The Jubilee process addressed a problem that has been something I've been working on for 20, 25 years, which is the very poorest countries. And whereas everyone in the countries and among their partners has always had hope that they were on the way up, and that's the reason why they borrowed money, to try to get into development. Behind every debt that can't be paid is a story of disappointment. So the issue has been how to deal with that in a way that respects, in some sense, the contract, the mutual obligations that were involved, but yet which makes absolutely sure that these countries have a clear path to development. So the Jubilee process, first, is an absolutely remarkable story of civil society organization and focus on an important issue, which is the issue of the poorest countries. And secondly, through all of the exchange, the debate, the critiques, the dialogue that's been involved through the Jubilee process, it has both, I think, helped us to enter into a remarkable dialogue with many of the religious organizations, but it's also helped us to advance very much towards many solutions that were blocked by policies and by lack of funding to deal with the problems of debt.
Catherine Marshall, Director of Values and Ethics for the World Bank. She spoke with Peace Watch correspondents Katia Stitt and Willard Jenkins. وغيرك يا رب لن يحمد لك الحمد والشكر يا خالقي Among the issues discussed at this year's Humanities Conference of the Fez Festival of World Sacred Music were the concepts of spiritual citizenship, the ultimate purpose of business and media, and ethics from the real to the virtual. Sociologist researcher Fatima Mernissa is with the Institute of Scientific Research at the Mohammed V University in the city of Rabat. Mernissa participated in the discussion on media and ethics with our Peace Watch producers Katia Stitt and Willard Jenkins. They spoke about terrorism and Africa and how the May 16th bombing in Casablanca was atypical of an African response.
This year is special because of the Casablanca events. Terrorism is so strange to our tradition of Sufism. And this is the center of Sufism. And this city, I was brought up, and I wrote a book about this, that when you are brought up here, they teach you that the only way you can become intelligent is by talking with strangers. Because the strangers makes you realize who you are. It's the best way to know who you are. Mm-hmm. And this is Sufism. Ibn Arabi is 11th century, and he was born in Andalus, Spain. Mm-hmm. And he crossed Fez to go to Konya, which is the center of Sufism in Turkey. And Ibn Arabi is very much present here. And I mean, everyone knows where he went and what street. And I am an Ibn Arabi daughter. Yes. And Ibn Arabi is the mirror. A mirror is the key. The mirror is the face of the stranger, is the mirror. You have to look at yourself in that mirror to get who you are. So this is when this terrorism, you know, against Christians or Jews or people who are different is so strange. So this is why you could see not only there was 2 million people in the street walking against terrorism, a lot of people have flooded like me to come here, because this is important now in this time of violence and wars, that this space be known for what it is.
The May 16th suicide bombings in Morocco's largest city, Casablanca, were the first such actions in this relatively peaceful and spiritual nation. Shortly after the May 16th suicide bombings in Casablanca, there was a massive anti-terrorism protest in the city, numbering an estimated 2 million demonstrators.
You felt it was particularly important to come here this time in light of the events of May 16th?
Absolutely, because this is the most important thing, is the dialogue spaces. And there is a lot of cities like that in the Muslim world. This is one of them. It's your city.
Yes.
You are. That's what I mean.
Fatima Mernissi is a native of Fez who has written on her experiences growing up in a harem household and who describes herself as not really having discovered the world at large until the age of 18, when she first gazed upon the Atlantic Ocean. She subsequently earned her doctorate from Brandeis University and has become one of African intellectualism's most eloquent voices. We spoke with Ms. Mernissi on the elegant plaza of the Bata Museum underneath a prodigious centuries-old Barbary oak tree.
Can you discuss, as a woman, your experience and the work you do now with women in this culture?
I stopped working on women, and I explain it on my website, since the first Gulf War, 91. Why? Because I discovered that there was a huge boom. In 1991, there was the first satellite, Arab trans-satellite television started, the Saudi NBC. And at the same time, there was the Gulf War decredibilized the state, and the citizens' movement started then. And I discovered, studying the dynamics between men and women in civic initiatives, in NGOs, that the men and women communicate, they don't fight. And then I decided to change my topic from women to civic synergy.
The Fez Festival of World Sacred Music, in addition to its daily and nightly concert performances, also hosts a parallel five-day humanities colloquium. Fatima Mernissi was one of a group of scholars, clerics, intellectuals, and mystics who participated in the public colloquium discussions.
Has the dialogue been rewarding to you so far?
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Just for your information, I didn't go out of this city, which is in the sand, 300 kilometers away from the sea, until I was 18. So we didn't have a possibility to move or to meet foreigners and so on. And the first day I went and I saw the ocean, the Atlantic. Number one, I said, okay, Fatima, you are going to be living here. And I'm living in the district in where there was the university. It's where I am now. And I would like to die there. And why I like the ocean, because of this opening and moving and the trips, which was only in my imagination until I was 18 and I saw it. And then that's when I decided I have to learn foreign languages. I was learning already French, but I wanted English, and I discovered I am not very good at languages. So I had to spend a lot of time and money, and I went as an au pair in London. And even then, I couldn't... I mean, learning a foreign language is a hard and an expensive job, but it paid me well. English was important for me because I discovered it's one of the most important of Islam's languages. When my book, I wrote the book in English, it was translated in Turkish and in Indonesian. When I write in French, or even if you write in Arabic, like many of my colleagues, it's not translated, but if you write it in English, it's... So, this is just to inform you, as an American, you have a wonderful communication tool to the Muslim world, English. Mm.
Can you discuss the paradox of the African-Arab experience?
Yes. This is why I am saying that this is a strange place, even for the Arab world. They call us in 1001 Night, all the magicians are from Morocco. Why? Because they think we are a little strange, and we are strange. And you know why? Because we are very African. For example, in an international conference, when I go to an international conference, the Senegalese and the Malian, we understand each other without talking. Immediately we are into a clan. But the Syrian, I don't understand what goes on in the mind of Syrian, because it's another culture for me. So this is just one of the things which makes this place extremely interesting, you know, African Arabs. And we have a fight. We don't understand each other very well with the Middle East, and that makes Islam, with its diversities and dynamics, and actually I think that's one of the extraordinary features of Islam, its dynamics, because of pluralism and everyone comes with his culture.
So perhaps that's one thing, one of the explanations for the reaction the Moroccans had to what happened in May.
What happened in May, for example, this is how can I say, this is crossing. This is a country where Africa and Europe and the East meet. So the dialogue, and also we never had anything to sell, neither jam nor oil. We only have the brains. And you make communication by trading, and that's all of the West Africa and, you know, Senegalese and the Malian, the same story about traveling to pilgrimage, Mecca pilgrimage. What's the meaning of that pilgrimage? That's where you meet all the planet's creatures, but they agree on ethics. You know, that's the... of course, there is a lot of reactions that terrorism came. Actually, many of the magazines said, Al-Mawt Al-Qadim Min Al-Sharq, death which is coming from the East, that it was the terrorism from this extremism, the mix with oil and extremism, and unfortunately this mix for me is not un-American. I don't call it Arab, I call it oil business.
Fatima Mernissi is author of several books, including The Veil and the Male Elite, A Feminist Interpretation of Islam. Her widely acclaimed autobiography, Dreams of Trespass, Tales of a Harem Girlhood, and the books Forgotten Queens of Islam and Islam, Gender, and Social Change. Her books were originally written in English and have been translated into several languages. She is an authority on Quranic studies.
Can you discuss your own experience growing up in this culture?
Yes. My own experience is the Sufi tradition, which is you respond to violence and anger by peaceful understanding. That's the Quran verse I read yesterday. Idfa billati hi ahsan. Respond to aggression by something better, which is understanding. Okay, this is the Quranic verses which I was taught in this civic, this dialogue weaving. And also, when I was small, and this you hear it all the time, if someone aggress me, you know, we have small streets in the Medina, if the someone or donkey push me and I'm angry, and he says, idfa billati hi ahsan, respond, you know, don't respond to anger by anger. So this is really classical. One of the rules I was taught is if someone aggress you, if you respond by aggression, then you are into a battle, and which battle you haven't chosen neither the place nor the time. So I was taught, my grandmother, Yasmina, she told me, you, the best battle you can win is the one you plan, and for which you plan time and space. When you are ready, not you answer spontaneously. So, as a woman, if, for example, at the university there is a big fight and they don't want to do, you know, something I propose, I just say, okay, ciao. And I go with 2, 3, and I start the thing, like, writing workshops about issues which were taboo, child abuse, sexual harassment, and I just, okay, this is not good for the university, ciao. And I do it, and then they become bestsellers and they come to the university. And so what is the idea? That's, I think, is the key. We have gift, which is the brain Allah gave us, or whatever the God, Buddha, elsewhere, whatever they call it, it's the same. We have the brain, and we have this energy and mobility, which is life. And my God, we should just respect that.
Fatima Mernissa is with the Institute of Scientific Research at the Mohammed V University. She spoke with Katia Stitt and Willard Jenkins. You're listening to a special edition of Peace Watch from the Fez Festival of World Sacred Music. I'm Verna Avery Brown. When we return, Iranian musician Kehan Kalhor shares his politics and his music with Peace Watch. We'll be right back.